shallow boat in the blind shot sea with love. The captain's free and he's the hero.
Greetings, friends, from the Assembly of Yahweh, New Covenant Assembly, here in the Northwest. We have a lesson today from the Torah, the Word of Yahweh, Yahweh the Son, who gave the Word face to face to Moses. And he gave it only to certain people, those who were in Israel, the children of Israel and the strangers, and in the future in the New Covenant area, those who are grafted into the good olive tree, according to Romans chapter 11, and there about verse 26 or somewhere. Anyway, it's pretty easy to find. And the very last two verses of Romans chapter 2, having to do with circumcision, is not in the flesh but in the heart. We've gone over these things in other studies. But now we're looking at the law from the perspective of a good Protestant Sunday keeper. Goes to church faithfully Sunday and to summer camps during the right in the middle of summer, when it's very nice up in the mountains where these events are generally held, maybe in a tent. Some of them are held in hot valleys. I don't know why they do that right in the hottest part of the season. But the feasts of Yahweh are kept at a cooler time. That's one of the many advantages of the feast of Yahweh, such as the Feast of the Last Great Day, which is commonly called in the fall, a month commonly called October, September, or October. And well, some advantages and some disadvantages. But whatever, whether it is or not, it's commanded and given by Yahweh. But from the perspective of a good Protestant, now I have to try to change my mindset here. Of course, we believe that we're saved by favor alone, by unmerited favor, commonly called grace. Ephesians 2:8 through verse 10. For we are His workmanship, created unto Yahweh, unto good works. We believe that. But I have to really put my mind into a different mindset here for the moment, and try to think like a Protestant preacher who is trying to convince people of what they want to hear and to take their money. Now, not only Sunday keeper pastors do that, do they? There's Sunday keeping pastors, and there's Sabbath keeping pastors, all kinds of leaders from around the world would more than love to take our money, wouldn't they? But here in Leviticus chapter 11, then after that lengthy intro, I'm going to say here, what if we are not grafted into the good olive tree, and we are not, or we are not a stranger grafted in, or we are not one of the Israelites? Then very, very little remains of the word that applies to us. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and the book of the Revelation are the only ones that I know of, and excluding the parts that are addressed to the seven assemblies, such as Sardis and Philadelphia, we have to exclude that because none of us are from those particular assemblies, although if you want to say that those are eras, those are just different dispensations, then that's another story. But in Leviticus 11, all these laws would not be applicable to us, which would leave us free to eat. Well, let's see. Verse 15, or 14, the vulture and the kite, every raven after his kind, the owl, the night hawk, the cuckoo, I believe, the hawk after his kind. We can eat a little owl, the cormorant, and the great owl. Now we're getting kind of into the swan dive here. Cormorant, the swan, or some say that actually means horned owl. And we can eat a pelican, and the gear eagle, and the stork, the heron after her kind, and the lapwing, and the bat. All fowls that creep going upon all four shall be an abomination, shall not be an abomination unto you if you're a good born-again Protestant, born from above, like our wonderful world leader Billy Graham says, who has many alliances with Vatican and with the communist leaders. And a lot of the things Billy says is right. In fact, most of the things he says, I suppose I haven't really added up and got the statistics there, but I would say that a lot of things that he says are correct. Although it's what he leaves out that, or what he infers, you know, where the problem is. But we're not going to attack Mr. Graham, for I've long respected his teaching and enjoyed it very much. And up until a point where I could see the law even greater than my teachers. Psalm 119 talks about you shall know even more than your teachers. Well, I don't know how much more I know than they do. They did, but anyway, let's keep reading the word here. All fowls that creep going upon all four shall not be an abomination unto you. In verse 20, if you are not an Israelite, right? Although there is a, you know, once there's a standard, once evil is evil, once an abomination is an abomination, then it should always be. But just for the sake of being a good Protestant believer here, let's just say that it is okay. It's okay to eat spiders, snakes, snails, slugs, to drink gasoline and kerosene, any, you know, tar, anything that we feel like, then we can eat it if we're not an Israelite or we haven't been grafted in. And, you know, in my mind, accepting Yahweh and asking Him to come into our lives and direct us and be the ruler with some rules, including that fourth commandment, to my mind, we are an Israelite. We've been grafted in, but not to the average Protestant off the street there. The nominal churchgoer only believes what they're told. How about those in verse 4? Nevertheless, you shall eat of them that... just reverse everything it says here. If it says you shall not do it, then turn that around to that you can. And where it says that you can, then I might as well turn that around and say that I can't. The word says, now I'm going to read this as it actually says here in my scriptures, nevertheless, these shall you not eat of them that chew the cud or of them that divide the hoof. Verse 5, the coney. Verse 6, the hare, because he cheweth the cud but divideth not the hoof. He is unclean to you except for good Protestants. He is clean unto you. The swine, you can eat that. Any pig or any part of it, pickled pig's feet and so on, are now clean for any good saved Protestant. We're all going to heaven together. And I know I'm saved. I know my heart is right. Even though Jeremiah chapter 7 verse something, or chapter 7 says that the heart is evil and deceptive. Who can know it? Let me spot that for you real quickly. I'd like to quote it correctly here. Make sure it's in chapter 7 and not some other nearby one. Well, I think it's a nearby one. I don't see it here offhand. Checking my notes, should be in chapter 17, verses 1 and 9. Verse 9 would say, what I'm looking for, the heart is deceitful above all things, and is desperately wicked, who can know it? Of course, the way they get around that is to say, well, once you're saved, then your heart is perfect, that you just go by the Spirit, which incidentally can contradict the Word. Even if it's against the Word, the Spirit is telling me something else, that this doesn't apply. But to the Jews it does. They have to do it. It's right for them, but for me it's wrong. I don't have to keep the Sabbath and the Feast of Tabernacles and that last great day because I'm not a Jew. That's the mentality and the false doctrine that is preached by radio Christian leaders, Baptist, many others. Chuck Swindoll is quite a false preacher, a swindler. And the word addresses his situation there in Ezekiel 13. The sin of Judah is written with a pen of iron, I'm reading in verse 1, and with a point of a diamond. The sin is graven upon the table of their heart and upon the horns of your altars, whilst their children remember their altars and their groves and where they got into idolatry. Yes, the scripture addresses the heart, that there's plenty of room for self-deception. Moving on from then in the book of the word of the law word, Now, going from the clean and unclean, let me finish up chapter 11, first of all, before we get out. Verse 41, "And every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth shall be an abomination, it shall not be eaten, except for a good born-again person, a Protestant Sunday keeper. It is pure and wonderful and holy, it shall be eaten. It's not an abomination. Whatsoever goeth upon the belly, them you shall not eat, for they are an abomination, except for the Protestant. They're not an abomination. They're what they called holy. We don't use that word. We use kodesh or separated or pure, because holy is a correct word. But let me be a good Protestant today, okay? And speak as if I were one. 47, to make a difference between the unclean and the clean, and between the beast that may be eaten and the beast that may not be eaten. On Noah's ark, they ate animals that were on the ark, and the clean went in by seven. The unclean went by two. I guess that's what happened to the unicorn, why you don't see him around anymore today. Because they were unclean, and they went in by twos, and somebody ate one of the mates. And so when the other mate went through life, it couldn't reproduce itself. It died, huh? Because if Noah, it was okay for him before the law of Moses was codified and officially given, then I guess it would have been okay for Noah to eat the unicorn and any other unclean animal. And that's why there are no more unicorns today. So goes the song by the Irish Rovers, but that's not exactly the way they did it. Using a little poetic license here. Using a lot of license with what these priests, these false prophets of the radio pulpits do these days. I'm sad to say, it's very disappointing, but they're fulfilling prophecy, and that's the way it's going to be. They can preach with all the money behind them to back up their radio programs, shortwave, TV, worldwide programs, and leaflets. We would never be able to catch up with them in that regard, and the amount of backing that they have financially and in manpower, because it's a more popular movement, following the crowd there. But don't worry about that, because Yahweh doesn't need a lot of that. He doesn't need popularity, and crowds, and pomp. He doesn't need any of it, ladies and gentlemen. Friends and neighbors, true believers in Messiah, as I, Stephen, is speaking unto you. Because it says, speak unto the children of Israel, then we should have the excuse to do the following. Let's look through here through the Word. And stop here right on about chapter 17. Talks about blood. Strangers that sojourn among you, in verse 10, that sojourn among you, that eateth any manner of blood, I will even set my face against that soul that eateth blood, and will cut him off from among his people. For the life of the flesh is in the blood. I have given it to you upon the altar to make an atonement for your souls. It is the blood that maketh an atonement for the soul. Even Yahweh HaMashiach, who died in the tree at Calvary about 2,000 years ago. Take plus or minus 30 years, possibly. We'll have to take 30 years. About the year 2033 will be the anniversary of 2,000 year after his death and resurrection. Hallelujah! From the Almighty Yahweh, who gives his spirit to those so that we can be alive. So anyway, in the Protestant theology, it is perfectly wonderful to eat blood. Duck soup, real delicacy there in England. Hang on a second. The false preachers of our day and of times past, even Martin Luther, did not tell the entire truth. So naming names today, that would be Howard Hendricks, Warren Wiersbe, just any evangelical leader, Benny Hinn, Gary Smalley, Chuck Swindoll, as I mentioned earlier, even James Dobson, who is into psychology, Christian psychology. What's the problem with that? Well, when it is greater and supersedes the word, the truth, when it even goes against what the Word says, that we shouldn't be worshiping other gods or other people, then that is wrong. To divine or to conjure up some sort of a thought, or when we pray that we're supposed to conjure up some sort of think of the word here, the New Age terminology for that is okay, making it happen by visualization, to visualize something. Well, it's good to have a vision, but to have some sort of a conjured up demonic idea, yeah, that's wrong. Anyway, we don't want to get into that right now. Leviticus 11, he says in chapter 18 now, chapter 18, did I say 11? 18:4, you shall do my judgments and keep my ordinances to walk therein. I am Yahweh. You shall therefore keep my statutes and my judgments, which if a man do, he shall live in them. I am Yahweh. Yahweh talks about living in him and walking with him, even to walk in his steps. Are we above the law to keep his judgments and statutes? His judgments, what's a judgment? Look in Exodus 21, 22, 23. Exodus 20, actually, the commandments can be considered judgments, but these are magnifications of the Ten Commandments, these judgments. For example, in chapter 23, Exodus, keeping the Feast of Tabernacles is just a magnification. He came to honor and magnify the law and make it honorable. So we magnify the law, the Sabbath day, by making it official that we should keep the Feast of Tabernacles, Feast of Passover. It doesn't matter whether someone is telling you have to do it or whether you want to do it so much, but the Word says that we need to do it. Don't feel like you're coerced. Oh, I only do it if I want to do it. Well, then, what good are you if you only want to do these things? I go to summer camp because I want to go. Well, of course you want to go. It's fun there. A lot of people, good cooks, fellowship and fun and games and nice messages where you sit back and relax. But even more so, when you keep the Feast of Tabernacles, you're doing something out of obedience. You're not obeying the preacher. You're obeying Yahweh, who said, go in the late summer to keep these things. Go when I tell you to go, when I ask you, when I beg you to go, however you want to put it. He's not putting some sort of a bondage or guilt trip on you by making you keep the Sabbath day and the feasts. He's showing you the way. He's giving an opportunity, and that's how I can get a day off from work to keep these feasts of Yahweh, the new moons, the monthly services there. Isaiah 66 for proof in that, and much more, but later. So, if it's okay, because we're not Israelites, because he said, speak unto the children of Israel, if it's okay to not do what the law says, we're not an Israelite, okay, then it's perfectly okay to uncover the nakedness of your father or of thy mother. But the Word says, the nakedness of thy father or the nakedness of thy mother shalt thou not uncover, she is thy mother. Thou shalt not uncover her nakedness. Nakedness of thy father's wife. The nakedness of thy sister, the daughter of thy father. And brother here is mentioned somewhere. But I know the father is. 14, thou shalt not uncover the nakedness of thy father's brother. Thou shalt not approach to his wife. She is thine aunt or aunt. 17, thou shalt not uncover the nakedness of a woman. But if you're a good Protestant, thou shalt uncover the nakedness of a woman, and you shall uncover the nakedness of her daughter, and also shalt thou take her son's daughter or her daughter's daughter and go ahead and uncover her nakedness, for they are her near kinswoman. It's not wickedness if you're born again. If you're a good Protestant, go ahead and it's perfectly encouraged by your preacher. If that's what you want to do, and you just tell him that's what you want to do, let him preach it. Of course, it doesn't always work that way. He has to have a certain appearance. He can't have the appearance of evil, so literally you cannot go up and say, hey, look, I believe in adultery. Start preaching that it's okay. Oh, okay, I'll take your money and preach that. Well, it's not quite that easy. But over a period of time, through tradition, through customs, and through manipulation of higher authority in church groups, and circles and cults. They're all cults. Well, actually, by definition of a cult, any religion is a cult. That doesn't mean it's bad. But anyway, cults or circles or churches, non-assemblies, non-congregations of Yahweh. The word has been corrupted, and truth is dead in the streets. Why can't we put the Ten Commandments up in the courtroom and the school? Well, because even though you might put them up in a church building somewhere, you won't observe them. You'll preach against it and say it's wrong. You'll ask the preacher, "Hey, didn't I hear you speak favorably about the law? I don't want to hear that. We don't believe that here. You want another job or something? You keep preaching like that, brother, and you'll have no more benefits in this denomination. Think about your retirement." Oh, well, yes. Now, who's going to say something like that to your preacher? You probably don't know anybody in your church, in your Sunday churches, who would say something like that, but they're people who are in positions of authority. Oh, they speak out of both sides of their mouths. They're so persuasive. With you, they'll say one thing, but behind your back, who knows what goes on? Why do some preachers go to Halloween houses until there's just so much pressure against them by the new thinking about Halloween that it's an abomination or that it's wrong, that it's New Age or something? Now finally, because of all this pressure, most of them won't go. They were playing Dragons and Dungeons. Many pastors were into this evil, satanic game. They'll do the Ouija board until there just gets to be too much pressure against them. It looks like they'll get kicked out, and then actually through customs and traditions, it's good in this case that they'll stop doing these things because there's so much pressure or political pressure in the church to keep them out of that. So you get the idea what I'm reading here in Leviticus 18. Verse 22, thou shalt lie with mankind as with womankind. It is great. 23, thou shalt lie with a beast. It will not defile you. And also a woman shall stand before a beast to lie down. It isn't confusion. This is what a good Protestant should preach if he carries out the logic to its logical extension. We have to be consistent. And if we're going to say that the word of Yahweh is not for us, if it says, speak unto the congregation of the children of Israel and say unto them, because we're not Israelites, well, then we're going to have to turn these things around and say that they're okay for us, even though, granted, that there is a standard and it can't apply to everybody. But then again, does it really, when it gets right down to it, do the statutes, do the feasts, feast of Passover and first fruits, do they apply to you? Oh no, that's different. And then we have moral relativism, where it's okay for us to say, now we don't have to keep those things because we're not Jews or whatever. Verse 24, defile yourselves in any of these things. It's great. He loves it. For in all these things, the nations are defiled, which I may or may not cast out before you. 26, you shall therefore either keep or not keep my statutes and my judgments. If you're a good Baptist, it doesn't matter to me. As long as you're saved, then you're going to heaven, and there's nothing you can do to lose your salvation. You've got eternal security, because I love everybody so much, Yahweh says, that he doesn't care what you do, as long as you'll, quote, love him, in the good old American Hollywood style. And you shall commit any of these abominations, any of your own nation, or any stranger that feels like it, who sojourns among you, let him take his liberty and just do whatever he feels like doing, as long as it is respectable on the outside. It's okay for the choir members to be playing hanky-panky in these little towns and various churches, and for the great leaders. Oh, we don't know what the leaders are doing, because they have their own little circles. But amongst the leaders, they have their... Not all leaders are bad, but amongst many, many leaders, that they have their secrecy. They have their clubs. What goes on behind the closed doors and the curtains of today's clubs and club churches? But the word of Yahweh says, defile not yourselves in any of these things. Do not stand before a beast. Do not lie with mankind as with womankind, etc. And and etc., etc. You shall even love your neighbor as yourself. Verse 15? No, that's about judging righteousness. Judge righteous judgment and judge thy neighbor. Thou shalt judge thy neighbor. If you don't do that, how are you going to separate and know the difference between a person that is to be castigated or not?
The rebellious person needs to be disciplined and separated, to be chastised, and remove yourself from them, or else you become like them and get their spirit, the bad things in life.
Yeah, to steer around these people, because that's what I was thinking of, to circumvent any of those that might pollute and defile you because of their way of lifestyle. Now, let's be honest, that most people believe that just sitting back at their home and watching television is acceptable. There's nothing wrong with that. We can do anything as long as it feels good. Just sit back and get lazy there and enjoy. Sometimes we should sit back and relax, but it goes to an extreme to where that's the rule. The people are continually simply sitting back and enjoying themselves all the time. That pleasure and leisure is too prevalent. Verse 26 of chapter 19 of Leviticus, 19:26, you shall not eat anything with the blood, neither shall you use enchantment, nor observe times. Good Protestant should say they don't, of course, because then it would look too obvious. You've got to be subtle. Satan was in the garden. Did Yahweh really say that you could lose your salvation? Did he really say if you ate of that tree, of the good and knowledge? Oh, come on now, he didn't. He loves people too much. God, a God of love. Come on. So you shall use enchantment. You shall observe times, such as days and months and times and years. See Galatians chapter 4. You shall observe times of the heathen, in other words, the winter solstice, the spring equinox, in other words, Christmas and Easter, above all. Even Jews should change Hanukkah to make a Christmas celebration out of it so that we can all be in unity. Great Fred Meyer, the shaven, smooth-shaven Jewish man, oh, he knows how to appeal to Americans and to whites. Yes, how cunning. But in verse 27, you shall not round the corners of your heads, neither shalt thou mar the corners of thy beard. Taken literally, if we look that up from the Hebrew, and then in Strong's Concordance, or even better, another one, Berry's Greek Interlinear, perhaps. No, that's just new, the newer part of Scriptures. But anyway, there's better references than that that would say that thou shalt not make any cuttings in the beard, and that is correct, that you should not, if you're a man, that is. You shall not make any cuttings in your flesh for the dead, nor print any marks upon you. I am Yahweh. Do not prostitute thy daughter to cause her to be a whore. A lot of this is repeat if you've got the other tape there. Can't think of the name of it. Oh, yes, maybe this is it. And it probably is not. Yeah, well, it wasn't. Wrong again, Stephen. But okay, what else? Do not prostitute thy daughter. And you shall keep my Sabbaths and reverence my Mikodesh, set-apart place. I am Yahweh. Now, of course, we have a problem with that. Because where it comes to Sabbaths, then it's different, isn't it? Then we don't have to. Regard not them that have familiar spirits, neither seek after wizards to be defiled by them. I am Yahweh. And I don't really preach enough on that, on the New Age stuff. Let's go to 20 verse 6. So I can hit that for you a little harder. And the soul that turneth after such as have familiar spirits and after wizards to go whoring, so to speak, after them, I will even set my face against that soul and will cut him off from among his people. Somebody said, a pastor said in Seventh-day Church of God, oh, well, you're just cut off, though. You're not sent out completely. You're just disfellowshipped. Oh, well, then we'll have to be consistent with that and look up wherever it says you'll be cut off and do all those other things too. Because it's not so bad, really. You're just cut off, is all. You haven't lost your salvation, according to them. And verse 9, everyone that curses or doesn't respect his father and mother. Well, praise Yahweh. We got to hear Psalm 1.